Amy Becker, welcome to the Public Diplomat.
Hi, nice to be here.
Amy, who's funnier, Democrats or Republicans? Don't answer that question. You do research on comedy and politics.
Yeah,
which is such a cool topic.
It's a lot of fun.
So why are politicians so much into comedy? I mean, Ronald Reagan went on those Friar Club roasts back in the day. Bill Clinton went on Arsenio. We had Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, In Between Ferns. What's the connection between politicians and comedy?
Well, I think it's strategic, right? So when you go on a comedy show, you're appealing to a different audience who might not be paying that much attention to politics, but they watch comedy. And so they bump into this political information while watching a comedy show, and they start to think about it and maybe look for information in other sources. The cool thing about appearing on a comedy program is generally the questions are pretty easy, right? So it's this lighthearted conversation, not necessarily about politics, but more about being personal. And so it makes politicians seem likable to people, even of the opposite party. So it's a strategic win.
Okay, so you do a lot of research on this, and I love your research, by the way. I actually read this.
Thanks.
You know, a lot of academic research is totally boring, but Amy's research is awesome. Right. Do politicians like Jon Stewart, you know, John Oliver, Jimmy Kimmel, you know, Trevor Noah, who just retired yesterday, do they make a difference?
I think so. I mean, it might not make a difference in going out to vote for them, but the qualities that get emphasized in these interviews remain top of mind for people when they think about that politician. If you think about it, so Joe Biden's first interview on Late Night Comedy as president was with Jimmy Kimmel. It was right after Uvalde, and he talked about gun control. And so I think it helps like bring visibility to issues that are important for politicians. And there's a strategic choice in who you interview with.
Absolutely. But what are some real life outcomes that these kind of shows have on political involvement, political engagement, so forth?
Sure. I think it makes people a little bit more likely to pay attention to politics and other sources. So it helps them learn a little bit. It makes them think about, you know, what's important to them. And maybe like it doesn't necessarily bring them out to vote, but make them think a little bit more seriously about voting. Or these shows can sometimes have effects on like easy acts of participation. So you'll fill out a petition or you'll do something online, right? So it encourages like things that you can do pretty quickly and easily. I think that they, you know, it's not just that clip, but it's when that clip is reshared in the media. So it becomes part of the media narrative. So you get attention beyond that initial interview.
You know, politicians have always been, in a way, political actors, right? I mean, satire is the ultimate form of democracy, right?
Right.
So these comedians can have a lot of power over American, over international politics, right?
Yeah, and they fill a vacuum, I think, because we're not getting as much sometimes from traditional journalists, right? So there's this gap, and we're relying on satirists to like tell us what to think and how to feel about politics and who to be critical. We talk in my class, so Jon Stewart was known for doing work to help the healthcare of 9/11 first responders. He took that this summer and was working on getting healthcare for veterans who'd been near burn pits. Right. And the issue gets so much more attention when someone like Jon Stewart speaks up and advocates for it than, you know, other media personalities, other politicians, because they've, he's acquired the standing in our popular culture.
Yeah. You know, it's really interesting because these comedians become thought leaders and political actors, but many of them don't really have the qualifications. I mean, Jimmy Kimmel, no offense, I love The Man Show. But Jimmy Kimmel is not exactly, you know, a political expert, in my view. Is there a danger here that these folks have a platform that may be, have unintended consequences?
Right. So I think it's important when you think about these comedians first, it's not just them, but it's their staff and their writer's room. And so if you think of someone like John Oliver, he's got a lot of former reporters in his writer's room. So the quality, you know, and expertise is there, just maybe not in him as the host himself. If you think of someone like Jimmy Kimmel, so like he's really well known for being involved on the healthcare issue, right? Because he talked about his son being born in 2017 with a pre-existing condition or a heart defect. And so he becomes more involved on healthcare. He actually gets called out in the process for not having his facts quite right. So there is kind of are these comedians really as accurate as a traditional journalist would be? But they're bringing a lot of visibility to the issue in a way that others can't. Right, because they're not as prominent. So there's a little bit of a, you know, questioning the quality of the information, but I think that, you know, the impact is real.
Yeah. You know, one of the criticisms, especially from the right, is that when you look at who's in charge of late night comedy, it definitely is people from the political left and sometimes, you know, further left. Are Republicans just not funny, as I asked before?
Yeah. So, you know, it's a little bit of, you know, who's in Hollywood, and Hollywood tends to be liberal. And so therefore, those are the folks who get the shows. I don't think that Republicans aren't funny. It's just maybe a different preference for humor and maybe for uncertainty and ambiguity. I do think that late night comedy used to be a little bit more apolitical. So we talk in my class about like Johnny Carson, right? In the old days of late night. And you didn't necessarily know who Johnny Carson or even David Letterman were going to vote for. And they were, you know, made fun of politicians from all sides of the aisle. It didn't really matter who you were party wise. I think we've seen certainly a shift towards more partisan comedy on late night television. But it used to be that that wasn't the case.
Yeah. So, Amy, I have a question. You know, we spoke about the ability of comedians to reach audiences that may not really be involved in politics, which is a really good thing, right? For political socialization, knowledge, and so forth. What about cord cutting? I mean, our students don't watch TV. Our students watch Instagram, you know, YouTube, right, and Netflix, right? So,
yeah. How is cord cutting? Mm-hmm. Right. So like, we don't watch comedy in the same way as we used to. Like, people don't sit in front of the television at 11:30 at night, right? But they do watch that clip that their friends share. Or they do watch the small segment of it that gets reposted on Twitter or on TikTok or on Facebook, not really on Facebook, if you're talking about students, you know, Instagram things, Snapchat, things like that. So they are taking, you know, they're seeing a piece of the original, right? They're not watching it in its traditional format, but that piece gets reshared. And so it's having an impact that way on social media, for sure.
Absolutely. We're talking about the ability of comedy to show the fun side of a candidate, that, you know, make the candidate less like a robot and more like a person that we can connect with. Outside of comedy shows, can you speak about politicians who use comedy on the campaign trail? I mean, we spoke about Ronald Reagan. He's a funny dude. And, you know, Bill Clinton always had great political humor. Let's talk about that.
So I think, you know, the jokes come up all the time, right? In the stump speeches, in the kind of off the cuff media recordings, and in the appearances. And I think, you know, fundamentally, people want to vote for someone who agrees with their politics, but also someone that they like, right? The whole idea of like, which politician would you want to sit down and have a beer with is actually kind of real, right? So we want to vote for someone who is both, you know, decent about politics, but also is like a likable person. And so the, you know, humor comes up all across the board, not just in these television appearances. And a lot of politicians have hired joke writers in addition to speech writers, right? So that they, you know, take advantage of inserting humor where they can, just to be a more likable person.
That's really interesting. I used to work in political campaigns. I would never imagine that somebody would hire joke writers. But, you know, let's speak about the correspondence dinner. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that event? I love it. It's one of my favorite comedy shows of the year. I recall when Barack Obama absolutely roasted Donald Trump at the end of his presidency for having the you know, the gall to suggest that he may be voted into the White House one day, and 2 years later, you know, it actually happened.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some of the more memorable correspondence dinner moments.
Sure. So that, and you know, a lot of people say that that may be Obama making fun of him, like further cemented Trump's idea of running, right? You know, that it maybe it did more harm than good in the long run. But that correspondence dinner has been, you know, important for a number of years. I mean, it appeals to an elite audience, right? Like, not everybody's watching it, but you do see the clip that gets reshared on the news and in social media. But I think, you know, Stephen Colbert's appearance when he roasted Bush was pretty notable. Trevor Noah just did it recently. Right. It's been kind of a get for those comedians to be able to do that dinner. And the humor, I think, traditionally was a little bit more lighthearted, but really starting with Colbert on forward, you know, they dig, right? And there's some satire in there and some tough jokes. So I think it's a really cool kind of event, right? You know, people who are interested in the stuff love it. Like, they call it a nerd prom for a reason. But I think that, you know, it and you didn't really have it under the Trump, you know, administration, right, in the same way. So I do think it's influential, and it really just almost depends on, you know, who gets picked to headline.
Absolutely. Right. We have to talk about Saturday Night Live. I mean, that show has affected politics historically over the decades. Can we speak about what the research tells us about this show and why it matters so much?
Yeah, so it's really interesting. And actually, the season's going to start on Saturday. And I just had a class on it. And we were trying to predict like what we think the opening skit will be. Saturday Night Live is important for a number of reasons. Number one, it's starting its 48th season. So it's been around a long time, right? And made fun of politics for a long time. I think, you know, it's been accused of becoming more political over the years and more critical. So if you look at the Sarah Palin stuff with Tina Fey, right, the Alec Baldwin stuff, Saturday Night Live historically was about getting the impersonation right and getting the speech and like kind of looking like the candidate, right? Mm-hmm. This new guy, Johnson, who's been doing both Biden and Trump, is a little bit more of a return to the old Saturday Night Live. Like his, if you walk in a room and you close your eyes and you listen to him, you might think you're really listening to Trump. Like he gets the voice quite right. But Saturday Night Live has always been this place where when a big political event happens during the week, like a debate, you think that, you know, they're going to cover it. That's what they're going to open with. And so I think they're important because they've broadened the range of the politicians they're willing to make fun of. And because we expect, you know, they're going to take it on, right? So there's this expectation. Now, people aren't watching at 11:30 on Saturday night, but they are seeing that clip reshared. And, you know, the Sunday morning talk shows and the news shows during the week are talking about it each week. So it extends the reach of the clip for sure.
Absolutely. Water cooler conversation all day long. Right. Amy, I'm obsessed with TikTok, and I'm sure that everybody's following me right over here. My editor is the public diplomat. I create content on international news all the time. What do we know about TikTok and the impact of super shorts on political discourse, if at all? I mean, it's kind of an early thing.
Right. It's still being studied, but TikTok's addictive, right? And a lot of my students talk about how good their algorithm is, like relative to other sites, because they're really showing you things that you want to see. I think with TikTok, there's a question of authenticity, like just like there is with politicians appearing on other platforms. But it is a new way for us to get our news content, right? And so, you know, being conversant on TikTok is just as important as it was being conversant on Instagram when it started for politicians. So it is definitely a place to get political information interspersed with all the other videos that you see. Yeah. So yet another source to engage people for sure.
It's going to be interesting to see if politicians will shift some of their paid social dollars away from traditional ads, which nobody wants to watch, into more engaging and hire our students to create TikToks for them. So interesting.
Yeah, I think it would be a great job, right? Could you imagine being like the TikTok person for the campaign for the season?
I would love it. I'll do it for either side, just for the experience. All right, yeah. Amy, let's end this conversation with who are your top three comedians in the world of politics or political comedians of all times?
Oh gosh, of all time, that's tough. Well, I think, you know, you can't think about this without thinking about Jon Stewart, right? And you think about all the people who started off on his show and left, you know, Stephen Colbert and all the cars, Samantha Bee, John Oliver. So his influence is real. And I think that, you know, while his Apple TV show is maybe not as popular as, you know, people would like, his influence on issues like burn pits and healthcare for veterans is really important. So I think he's really important. I think that, I guess, you know, David Letterman, right? People always used to say that the road to the White House went through him, that, you know, that whole late night, and he's representative of Jimmy, you know, Johnny Carson and Jay Leno, but the whole, those conversations on late night comedy were not that political and they were kind of the start for what would happen later. So I think that really important there. And I guess, you know, if we're thinking about Saturday Night Live, I don't know. I mean, they're all really important. I think Weekend Update, right? So if you look at the hosts who've been there, so Tina Fey, Amy Poehler, Seth Meyers got a start on Weekend Update, right? Now he has his own show. So looking at who's been on that stage and where they've gone, I think it's important to look at for the trajectory of political comedy for sure.
Absolutely. And let's not forget my favorite, Norm Macdonald, who was an absolute legend. All right. And to anybody watching, I highly recommend that you watch the Donald Trump celebrity roast on Comedy Central, a true classic moment in politics and comedy, although that was before he officially announced his candidacy. Amy Becker, you are so lucky. Your research is fascinating. It's interesting. It's great. And I just, every time you publish something, I always love to read it. So thanks for coming on The Public Diplomat.
Thanks.
And let's keep on smiling.
Okay, sounds good.